Hello, and welcome to episode 7. I still can't believe that this was something that I'd been thinking about for 2 or 3 years, maybe longer, and researching different things to start up, thinking about how do you start, where do you start, how do you record, how do you upload, etc., and now it's reality. I still feel as if I'm kind of in a pinch me moment. And I've got to say thanks to everybody who has been listening and supporting me since the start of this. It's been really nice and it gives you that little boost of confidence sometimes that you need. I also want to thank my guests that have been on and the ones that are planning on coming on, because I've just secured a couple more guests over the coming months and hopefully we'll get more in. I think Ainsley's going to come back in to talk about one of the topics in the next couple of weeks as well, so that'll be good. I think this week I'm just going to talk about mental health as an all-rounder in general, not one specific topic, because I think that in a sense might alienate some people who are tuning in to get a bit of reassurance. So I think this one's for everybody. So mental health, as we all know, it can happen to anybody, any of us, any time in our life, any age. It's not gender specific. It's not just adults. It can be children as well. And I know a lot of people still think, how can children struggle with their mental health? What do they have to worry about? But when you think back to when you were a child, you maybe had some worries, and if you were lucky not to, that's amazing. But unfortunately, not everybody's in that same position. Some people do have struggles. I mean, if you think about what you see on news almost daily about things that have happened to individuals or things that the police are investigating, and if it's something the police are investigating, there's always people behind that who are hurting, who, whether it be family members or victims, etc. And that can take a lot of getting over. But it doesn't have to be something as severe as that to trigger your mental health. It can be grief, loss. And grief can also come in a strange sort of way when it comes to the end of a relationship as well. Because you can be grieving a relationship that you thought was going to be forever. You can be grieving that person who you thought was going to be your forever person. Obviously, we all know about grief in the other sense where someone sadly passed away. And in each circumstance, we should be there for one another. We should be helping each other because it can take a while to get over. And there's no time limit on grief. It's not like you will be over this in a week or you will be over that in 3 months. Grief can take months to appear, to show signs. It can go on for a long period of time, especially if you were very close to the person. But on the flip side, if you weren't very close to the person, you lost contact, it could have been a parent, a child, grandparent, whatever, and you lost contact with them, you maybe had a falling out, then sometimes you can feel guilt. And you've got no need to feel guilt, depending on the circumstances, obviously. But you need to find a way to move forward, a way to continue your life and live a happy life. And if that is seeking help or saying sorry in another way, then you do what's right for you. You go through that process in the way that feels right to you. No one can tell you what's right or wrong in that situation. You've also got, when it comes to children, it could be parents are splitting up and they feel like they're the one in the middle because you've got mum, you've got dad, you're going to mum's, you're going to dad's potentially, and you maybe only stay with one parent or they may only stay with one parent. And it's almost like children just see what's in front of their face in that moment, so they maybe feel as if they have to prove their love for each individual parent, or if it's the one parent that they are solely with, they may feel as if they have to show that parent that they are on their side or whatever. And that can be a lot for a child. It can be a lot on a child's shoulders. So I think continual conversations with that child, ensuring that they know that this isn't their fault, this isn't anything that they have to deal with, that they can just, they still need to be happy, they can still be happy. You still want them to be a child. You don't want them to grow up too fast. You don't want them to take on any responsibilities that they maybe didn't have previously just because that said relationship's broke up. That's just one sort of circumstance where it might affect a child. There's many, many more. Obviously, we do hear about children that have gone through some kind of abuse. And in that case, they need the right support, they need the right help, they need the right therapy. So that's a whole other ballgame. That's something else that's on that child's shoulders, and that's something that will potentially carry on into their adult life. The same as an adult, if they go through any kind of abuse or trauma, they will carry it for every day. But it's getting the right help, ensuring that you're working through, making progress, continuing to live your life, and not letting that take over your life. It's very easy to sit back and allow it to ruin your life, but if you can have a good support system round about you, then you can still have a very, very happy, healthy life. And we don't want any negativity to carry forward with us. We don't want to be negative all the time. We don't want to be untrusting towards people because of an issue that we've gone through. So in that case, you do want to ensure that you have the right people around you, people that you do trust, people that you can go to or that you can depend on. The same as they should be able to depend on you as well. It's not a one-way system. We should all be there for each other, especially within friendships and families, relationships as well. But of course, there's another side to mental health where it's not due to trauma, and it's not due to anything that you've seen or anything that's happened to you or to somebody that you know. It can be genetic. It can just be part of your makeup. We've obviously got things like bipolar disorder. You've got schizophrenia. We have things like Munchausen's disease. There's many, many more. That the list is basically endless. You could go through them all. I think Munchausen's has been spoken about a lot more because of a certain Netflix documentary and people that have gone to prison and things like that. You've maybe heard of it, you maybe haven't. So Munchausen's is about a person who will fabricate illnesses, make up illnesses. They will see signs that are there that aren't actually there, and they are adamant that this person, whether it be theirself or whether it be somebody that they care about or love, has a terminal illness or something as severe as that. Again, it's all about the right care. In that sense, you would need the right medication as well. And I know a lot of people don't want to go on medication, which is very understandable, and that's why there are a lot of holistic therapies out there, and we will, in coming episodes, there will be a lot more spoken about holistic therapies. But when it comes to medication, sometimes it is needed, and you can try your hardest and your hardest, but sometimes medication along with talking therapy, counselling, however you want to describe it, is sometimes needed together. They both come hand in hand. You can't do just medication because you're not getting to the root of the issue. You're not getting to what triggers you, and that's a big part of making waves with your mental health. Talk through everything and getting to the core of it, finding your way of coming to terms with things in your head, realising that this isn't your fault, this isn't because you've done anything bad, it's just unfortunate that you are going through a blip at this moment. So medication, when we talk about medication, one thing that I like to point out, especially to my clients, if you are determined that you're not going to go on medication, and it's just purely because it is potentially an antidepressant or something similar. So usually when somebody says to me, nope, I'm not going on it, I don't want to go on it, and I'll ask why, and that's not because of any negative feedback that they're giving me. I am generally interested in why do you not want to go on medication. And the biggest majority of the time, they don't have a reason. It is just because of an antidepressant. So they don't have a reason. There's no side effects or anything. There's nothing. It's just, it's almost like the stigma of being on an antidepressant. People will look at you differently. Nobody has to know you're on that medication. Nobody has to know you're on any medication, whether it be paracetamol or dialysis, whatever. Nobody has to know what's going on in your personal life unless you decide to tell them. But then when you look at, if you were to go on heart medication because you have a condition with your heart, if you were to have treatment for cancer, for renal, anything like that, that is keeping you alive, you would never doubt it. You would always say, yes, I want to live as long as possible. I want to take any medication that's offered. So why not with antidepressants? Antidepressants could be keeping you alive. Mental health can affect your thoughts. It can affect how you go about your everyday. Sometimes in our heads we think that we should be doing something to ourselves, harming ourselves or worse. And that's where antidepressants come in. It is to try and relieve these thoughts. Try to stop you from hurting yourself. Try to stop you from doing anything worse. So essentially, your antidepressant could be keeping you alive. It's just a bit of food for thought. And normally, when I do explain it to my clients, they see it in a different light. They see antidepressants as almost a lifesaver, in a sense. And you don't necessarily have to be on antidepressants for life either. It will all depend on the severity of your mental health, how you overcome it. If you overcome it, obviously depending on where your mental health sits in the chart, what you're diagnosed with. Obviously some, like schizophrenia, things like that, may be a lifelong condition, which means that you will potentially be on medication for life unless you are considered to be able to live without it, without harming yourself or harming others. Then you've got maybe like grief. Sometimes when grief goes on for too long, it can then turn to a depression, put you into a depressive state. And when it goes by X amount of months, your doctor, psychiatrist, psychologist may think that, okay, it's went on a bit long, maybe we will try something in the short term. And it usually is only short term. So think of it that way, that you don't have to be on this for life. And it's a case of, like everything else in life, we take it a day at a time, a week at a time, a month at a time, however it may be. Just bear in mind that when you do decide, or if you do decide to go on any medication, it's not a miracle cure. It is not going to correct your mood straight away. It can take a while to get into your system. Sometimes we do have to try different medications, trial and error. Just like with any other medication, what works for one person may not work for another. Being open and honest with yourself is just as important as being open and honest with others. We can be very good at asking everybody else how they feel and telling them they should be coming to us if they've got any issues, if they're struggling with anything, but how often do you take your own advice? I know the majority of us don't very often. And obviously I talk a lot about self-care, self-love, because you've got to care for yourself and love yourself before you can care for others or love others. Obviously if you've had children, you understand love in a different way, and you know that you're going to love that child forever. But again, depression can make you think differently, and knowing when your thoughts are changing and knowing when your thoughts aren't healthy is a big part of self-care and self-love, and also a time when you know that you need to speak to somebody, whether it be a professional, whether it be a family member, a very close friend, just to let them know that you think something isn't quite right, you're thinking a certain way. And that's okay. We can all have blips in the road. We can all have struggles. And anybody that says, I've never struggled with anything, they're lucky. But it doesn't mean to say that they will continue on that path. We would love to think that nobody, there's people out there that never struggle, or everybody would never struggle again in their life. But it very rarely happens. Self-care and self-love is something that is just for you. So you can care for others, and you can care for, and you can show them that you love them, but how often do you care for yourself and show yourself the same love? Caring for yourself is, do you ensure that you are eating 3 meals a day? When the kids are sitting eating, partner's sitting eating their dinner, whatever, are you ensuring that you're sitting having a meal at the same time, or are you too busy going and doing all the housework? Are you getting enough sleep at night? 8 hours, etc., 7 hours, everybody's body's different, so everybody's body will need a different amount of sleep. But are you ensuring that you're getting enough sleep at night? Before you go to work, before you go to college, uni, take the kids to school, are you ensuring that you're having breakfast, cup of tea, cup of coffee, whatever it is that gets you up in the morning, keeps you going? Do you make sure that you've got some time for yourself, or are you just running on empty? Having time for yourself doesn't mean to say that you need hours and hours at a time. It can be you're just sitting having a cup of tea while reading a book or watching your favourite show in peace and quiet without it being disturbed, and without you drinking a freezing cold cup of tea. I had my own self-care day today, and again, like everybody else, I don't always take my own advice, but it was needed, it was essential. So I went out to see my best friend, spent a couple hours with her, and then I went for a massage. And it was needed. I keep pulling muscles in my shoulders and my neck, etc. Which means that I'm not giving my body the right care it needs. So it was time to down tools and do something about it. And that was exactly what I'd done. And I feel so much better for it afterwards. So I spoke about knowing the changes in yourself. But what about others? Would you be able to spot the changes in someone else? Whether it be someone that's close to you, or maybe just a colleague at work, or it could be a neighbour. Some of the changes that you might see in someone who's struggling is they don't leave the house as often. They're maybe a bit more unkept. Their personal care isn't as well kept as it normally is. Do you think they're losing weight? They're looking a bit tired. They could be putting on weight. And I don't just mean a little pound or so. It would be a bit more drastic than that. I would say losing weight is more common than putting on weight with someone who's struggling with their mental health. And that doesn't mean that, it doesn't mean that they have any condition that needs to be diagnosed to do with their eating. It just means that sometimes your metabolism can be a bit faster. Sometimes they may be missing out on food throughout the day. They're possibly not sleeping enough. But on the flip side, they could be sleeping too much, which means that they don't have enough time to eat either. It's more about physical appearance rather than anything else, because we can all put a smile on. And you know yourself, someone says to you in the street, oh, hi, how are you? You automatically say, oh, I'm good, thanks. You could be feeling the worst that you have ever felt. You'll always say you're good, because for some reason, we don't want to open up to people. We don't want to leave ourselves bare. So instead of saying, oh, I'm feeling a bit rubbish, or I'm just back from the doctor's, or I maybe need to go, I've been off work for so long, we just automatically say, I'm okay, I'm good, thanks, how are you? And it's that circle, that person then says to you, I'm good as well, thank you. And then you walk on. And we all do it daily. It's when you see the signs of someone who is struggling, then instead of saying to them, how are you? Why not change the wording? You could say, are you getting enough sleep? Are you feeling okay? Do you need someone to talk to? Is everything okay at home? It all depends on how close you are to that person. If it's just somebody you work with and you only see them in passing and you haven't built up a friendship, you wouldn't necessarily say to them, is everything okay at home? Or anything that may make them think that you're being nosy or to make them defensive. If you don't feel as if you can approach the person because you don't know them well enough and you maybe know someone that knows them a bit better, you could say to them, do you know if they're okay? Could you check in on them? I think they're maybe not quite themselves. And again, ensuring that their privacy is also kept, because you don't want everybody talking about them either. And you don't want them to feel as if everybody's talking about them. There's a stigma as well with mental health that men shouldn't or don't, can't, however you may describe it, struggle with their mental health. There's, especially in certain parts of the world, the UK is bad for it, where people will say, man up, pull your socks up, just go on with it. Life isn't always as easy as that. Men can struggle with their mental health. Men do struggle with their mental health. Many men do struggle with their mental health. And we see every day, almost, men taking their own life. And that's something that needs to stop. We need to stop thinking of men as they have to just go on with things. They have to be stronger. They have to be X, Y, Z. Men have to start opening up. Men have to start being honest. And men have to deal with things the same way as women do. So if you know a man who's struggling with their mental health or potentially struggling with their mental health, ensure they are getting the correct help. Ask them to talk to somebody. Now, if they don't feel as if they can speak to their friends or their family members for that exact reason that I've just mentioned about being judged, worrying about people not seeing them being as manly as what they should be, they can phone many helplines which are very confidential. They don't have to be face to face with anyone, and they also don't have to give any personal details. These are charities that are there for this exact reason. People that don't want to be known to have mental health issues or struggling with their mental health, struggling with their thoughts. We don't want to wake up every day and turn on the telly or open social media, open a newspaper to see that another man has taken their life. We also don't want to see that any women are taking their life or any children. This isn't solely about men, but I want to bring to attention that men need to start opening up more. Men shouldn't be judged because they are going through a certain situation, and it doesn't matter what's took them there. The only thing that matters is that they get the help they need. And once you start opening up, you will realise that there's probably many people within your circle, male, female, however they like to be known, will also be struggling. But because everybody keeps it a secret, nothing gets fixed. Nobody can be there for each other. Whereas if you speak to somebody and then they say, oh well, I've been struggling, or I did struggle in the past, or I know someone that was struggling, they may be able to give you some advice. You may be able to be a shoulder for each other. You could go through your journey together. And if you are unsure where to go for help, there are many charities that you can Google online. You've got your GP who, if you want to go down that route, you've got your GP who will then refer you to whichever department it may be that you need to be refer to. You also have private sector, so you get private counselling, private psychiatrists, private psychologists, private eating clinics, because again, anybody can have an eating disorder, and eating disorders are part of mental health, and the people that are struggling with it, they're eating, struggling many different ways, not just with food. And again, that can come from trauma, it can come from things that have been said to them, many, many things. And again, that's not limited to male or female, adult, etc. Children can struggle with eating disorders, teenagers. And the same as anything else to do with mental health, it is not gender specific, and it's also not linked to a certain age group, any age. Obviously, statistics, will be dependent on your own country, your own town, your own state. There will be some countries where it is higher for men to have a disorder than women. There will be some countries where it's higher for women to take their own life than men. And then there will be some places where it will be children, unfortunately, which is very sad. We never want to see that. We never want to hear that. And I would love, again, I say it all the time, to wave a magic wand and eradicate mental health, get rid of the stigma, get people talking, get people asking questions, be knowledgeable. If your son, daughter, niece, nephew, grandchild, whatever, came to you and said, I'm struggling with my mental health, would you know what to say? Would you know what to do? The best thing to do is get them to open up. You don't have to talk. Let them do all the talking. Just be there as a comfort, and then advise them to get the help, especially if it's sounding quite severe. Because we don't want to worry every time they go out the door or every time my bedroom door's closed. We don't want to be counting the minutes on the clock, how long they've been out, or if they're late home, it could just be due to a bus being late or their taxi being late. But when you know someone's in a certain state of mind, you panic every time they're out of eyeshot. It can also change your mood. So in the sense where someone can be happy, bubbly, always outgoing, always partying, sometimes they can be very aggressive's not the right word, but they can be short-tempered. So they might not take jokes as well, especially if they think it's aimed at them. And a part of it as well will be because they're not sleeping, or they're not sleeping enough. They're also, they're fighting their own demons, they're fighting with themselves, they're fighting with their thoughts. They don't have any self-confidence, or they have very little. Someone might still be outgoing, they might still be smiley, happy, and they can still be struggling. I found it very easy to put a mask on for everybody. I had a different face for every different person I seen, and none of it was unhappiness. No one would have known, unless you knew me very well, no one would have known, because I'm very good at hiding things. And sometimes we think we're stronger than what we are. Sometimes it's burying our heads, we think it's just going to go away, and it very rarely does. People with certain conditions also get very good at lying as well, especially when it comes to eating disorders. There's always an excuse, there's always an answer for why they don't want to be fed, why they don't need a meal, they're in a hurry, the vet, they're going to eat when they're out. The list is endless. But you know that person, and you'll know if they're telling the truth or if they're lying. Something that a lot of people worry about is work. They think that if their boss finds out that they are struggling, then they'll lose their job, or they maybe want to go for a job and they've got a history of mental health from whatever forum. They think that that's going to stop them from getting a job, but especially in the UK, there are laws, legislations, etc. in place to ensure that that doesn't happen. Obviously, I can't speak about anywhere else in the world because I'm not up to date with laws all over the world. But especially in the UK, you do not have to worry about that. No one can tell you that you're not getting a job, because obviously if you were going to be dealing with certain machinery, etc., that maybe affect medication that you're on or could be cause for concern, then yeah, but they could maybe find another role for you. But you cannot lose your job because you're taking time off to work on your mental health. That's not a negative, that's a positive. And obviously, depending on how long you've been with your company, then you would have a case to take to court. And sometimes just letting your boss know that you know the ins and outs will work in your favour. Always go in armed with the information, with the facts. Never go in not knowing your rights. And again, there's many places that you can find employee rights. You can find them online. If you're in the UK, you can speak to your local citizens advice bureau. If you're out with the UK, you maybe have your own version, which is, so the citizens advice bureau is somewhere that you go to find your legal rights. They can sometimes fight on your behalf. And this is a charity, so it's free. If you don't have that, you can speak to an employment lawyer, and they'll be able to advise you. School and college, again, if you're having to take time off, it doesn't mean that you can't keep up with your studies. They can easily, especially nowadays, it's a lot easier because we've got email, we've got online study programmes and things. So they could be sending you all the classwork that you're missing out on. You could maybe come to some kind of arrangement with them. And if it's like college or university and you're worried because of your past history, that shouldn't be an issue. As long as you have the grades and they have the spaces and you present yourself well and you show them that you are keen to learn, keen in this subject topic, then you should be considered for the college or university place. There's a lot of support, or there should be. Obviously, some colleges and universities may be better than others. But nowadays, again, because mental health is spoke about a bit more than it used to be, then they tend to have things in place for anyone that is struggling. And it could be you're struggling with your coursework. It could be you're struggling out with the course. But that's fine, it doesn't matter what you want to talk about. There's always somebody there, and they've usually got some kind of counselling service as well. If not, again, it's back to the GP or phoning around and getting appointments. Obviously, if it's private, it can cost, and it depends where you are and who you're asking for help. Everybody will have their own price list. We said earlier on about mental health not being gender specific or being limited to any age group. So if it's a child, obviously you don't want to go in and ask them grown up questions. Sometimes, depending on the age group, you could sit down and play a game with them, and once they get into the game you could start talking that way. They could be drawing pictures and ask them to describe the picture. Ask them how their day was, how was school, like, do it in a child-friendly way. Obviously, as they get older, then the way you question would be towards an older child. If they're 12, 13, 14, 15, they want to be treated like an adult. They're not an adult yet. They like to think they've been treated like an adult. So if you speak to them on a more child-friendly adult basis, you might get more out of them. Obviously, we know that teenagers, preteens, aren't the best for talking. Sometimes it's a grunt. Sometimes it's a I hate you. We've all been there, we've done it, we've lived it, we've watched it happen. Yeah, teenagers are fun. Can you hear the sarcasm in my voice? But again, you know your child, so you know what their normal is, and you know how far that you can go with the questioning. You don't want to interfere with their privacy either, though. Then they won't trust you. They think they're just you're just being nosy and you're not actually trying to help them. So be careful how you word it and be careful what you're asking them. You don't want to go too far into the privacy. You don't want to sound as if you're accusing them either. Because the minute they think they're being accused of something, you're not getting anything out of them. They'll put their back up. They'll close the doors. They'll shut. And that's the end of that conversation. You may be able to approach it again later on, but not in that moment. You have to just give space, allow them their privacy, and let them either come to you or try again on another day. But try it in a different way if it doesn't work first time. And again, like any of us, sometimes they will just say, "I'm okay," and that might be the right answer. That might be how they are actually feeling. You maybe think that there's something wrong, but it could just be them being a teenager, because teenagers are hard to read. Preteens are hard to read. They've got their hormones, they've got everything's changing. They don't understand what's going on with their body. Their body doesn't understand what's going on with their body. So how are they supposed to know? They see their friends going one way and another friend's maybe going another way. Their friends are changing. Their friends might be starting to like things that they don't like. So then it feels as if they're losing people. So it's almost like a loss, like we said at the beginning, where you can feel as if you're grieving for a relationship. When a relationship breaks down, you can have that. Children can feel that way as well when they're losing a friend, especially if it's a very close friend, a best friend, somebody that they've been friends with for many, many years and have never had a falling out or very, very little. And again, it's just about supporting them, comfort them, let them know that everything's going to be okay. They will still have friends. They'll make new friends as life goes on. And I think as well, preparing children as they get older. So, for example, once they get to 15, 16, 17, and obviously we're preparing them for the big world. We're preparing them for whether they want to go out to work, go to college, go to university. But also prepare them for the other side of it, where when you do these things, sometimes we may lose contact or have less contact with friends that we were close to at school. But that's okay, because you also make new friends. And you, when you go to college, when you go to university, a lot of the time you're going to make friends with people that have got the same interest as you, because they're doing the same courses, or it'll be friends of friends. Everybody just comes together, and it can be very social going to college and going to university. They have very many nights out and they absolutely love them. They don't study as much maybe, but yeah. Being young is all about enjoying it. It can't all be about study, 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 work, work, work. You've got to enjoy your life as well. And they've got to be given that sort of free rein when they get to that age. You then have to remember that you're treating them like an adult now and not like a child. And it can be very hard. I remember when my oldest son turned 18, and it was very hard trying to find the way of, how do I treat him now? I don't want to let him think that I don't care about him anymore. But I also don't want to treat him like a child. And it takes a little while for you to find the balance. And that's okay. But you'll get there. We all get there in the end. And we all find what's the right for our family, or what's the right for our household, or friendship, whatever it may be. If they decide they want to go out to work and they don't want to go to college or university, that's fine as well. Sometimes learning on the job is the best way for some of us. Not everybody is academic. Some people are more hands-on. I know many people that prefer hands-on learning rather than sitting in a class and somebody telling us, or reading it out of a textbook, etc. Learning as you go can be more beneficial depending on the job. I don't want it to sound all doom and gloom this week, which I feel as if it has, because we're just basically talking about mental health and where it can affect people, how it can affect people, where you can get help, where you, who you want to help. But I said earlier on that when I was struggling, I was very good at putting a face on for everybody. And just to tell a wee funny story, I used to go out on a Saturday night with one of my best friends to the local bar. I only had one child at the time, and he would go and stay with my mum on a Saturday night to give me a wee bit of a break. And I was really, really struggling at this point. But I thought I still had to be that person. I still had to be the life and soul of the party, blah, blah, blah. So yeah, I would go out and have fun. In my head, there was a million things going through my head at the time, but I had to show everybody I was having fun. I had to be the party girl, blah, blah, blah. And that was all fair and well, because it was probably one of the only times you would get me out of the house, is on the Saturday night, because I didn't really do anything, exercise, whatever. But I don't know about where you are, but obviously I'm in Scotland, and the primary schools here, especially the younger kids in primary school, so maybe 5, 6, 7, would do what they call news on a Monday. And news was, tell a story about what happened over the weekend. Any of you know where I'm going with this? My son, who was 5 or 6, I can't remember, because he had the same teacher for 2 years. I know what teacher he had. He had the same teacher for 2 years, so I can't remember what year it was. I think he might have been 6. And he used to say that this teacher was an old lady, and the reason he called her an old lady was because she had this big tooth like Nanny McPhee. So if anybody asked him, "Oh, what's your teacher like?" obviously they meant, "Is she nice? Does she shout a lot? Whatever." And he said, "She's an old lady." What makes her an old lady? She's an old lady with an old tooth. And this was the Nanny McPhee tooth that I'm talking about. Anyway, she was very, very old school. I was scared of her. Everybody was scared of her. She just looked scary. So, Monday morning comes, he goes to school. He came home and I said, "Oh, how was school? Oh, it was good. Tell me all about school. What did you say for your news?" Here we go. He went in and told his teacher and all his class that his mum was at the bar on Saturday night, dancing naked on the tables. Steaming drunk, please. I had parents' night coming a week or two later, and I thought social services were going to be there. I mean, you got part of the story right. It was a Saturday night and I was drunk. There was no dancing on the tables, and there most definitely was no nakedness. So yeah, that's our... I don't know how to pronounce it off. I don't know how to describe it. That's what my son thought of me when he was 5, 6 year old. And it makes you think, what do kids actually think about when their parents go out? What do they think that their parents do? Or what do they think is on? Do you know, if you're driving by a bar or you walk by a bar, if you're in town with the kids and they hear all the noise and all the laughter and all the shouting and whatever else, what goes through kids' heads? What do kids think? Because you don't take them into a bar. Very rarely do we take them into a bar, especially not late at night, because that's for grown-ups. That's where you go when you're an adult. So what do they think is on behind those doors? Only adults are allowed to see. Do we think their imagination runs away with itself? Because clearly my sons did. He obviously thought the women danced naked on the table. I don't know whether they thought the men did as well, so it could have been something very illegal going on in that bar, if he was right, which obviously he wasn't. But yeah, what goes on in kids' heads? Kids' imaginations are wild, but they're amazing. They really are. They think the strangest things. But they're funny, they're comical when you actually analyse what they're thinking. And that's every age group in a child. So that's my funny story for this week, to try and lighten the mood a little bit. I hope everybody enjoys their week. next week I will be talking about trolling, potentially. Oh, no, I'm not. That's a lie. That's, I think, the week after. What am I talking about next week? I don't know. But because it is the week after, and I have told you that now, if you've got any stories about trolling, bullying, social media, negative or positive, obviously there's no positive about trolling, but I'm talking about if you've got any positive stories about social media or any negative stories, and we won't solely be talking about trolling, we won't solely be talking about everything online, but we will, a big chunk of it will be about that, because that's the thing nowadays, isn't it? But where does trolling start and where does it end? What age groups? Bullying can start within school, within a workplace, within whatever, and then carry on to online trolling. Do you know anybody that's experienced that? And would you like to tell a story? Or would they? Even if you don't want to come on to talk about it, you can write in, and there'll be no names mentioned, no areas, anything like that. Everything will be confidential. It will literally just be the story. And if you do put names in, I'll change them. Social media and all these streaming sites and the online gaming, things like that, they can be positive, but there's also a negative side to them. There's a very dark side to them. So I think it's a bit more of awareness than anything else. So yeah, 2 weeks' time, it'll be online mainly, but there'll also be sort of bullying, a wee bit of advice for parents, a bit of advice for children, whatever age you are. If you're still classed as a child, or if you're classed as an adult, there will be some information there for you. There'll also be information of where you can go and get some help. Next week, I'm not entirely sure, because a couple of the episodes have been changed because of who's coming on to talk with me. So it's fitting in everybody else's diaries as well. But it will hopefully be a good one. I'll try and get something a bit different for next week. It's funny how we think we're organised, and then in reality we're not as organised as what we think. I always say I'm the most disorganised person. Although in my head I'm organised, I suppose it's organised chaos is the best way to describe me. I know where I'm meant to be, when I'm meant to be, and I can be there. But it's when I don't know, and then I'm like, oh, right, how do I fill that time? How do I fill that minute? Anyway, I'm rambling. I'm talking a lot of rubbish. So we will leave it at that. If anyone has anything they would like me to talk about next week, get in touch and I'll look into it. Other than that, it's a surprise for you and it's a surprise for me what's happening next week, but let's hope it's a good one. It will be, I promise. But enjoy your week, and I hope you enjoyed the episode. Thanks. Bye-bye.